welcome to Relationship Rewind on WERU FM 89.9 Blue Hill. I'm your host, Carrie Clark, she/her pronouns, the youth educator and advocate at Next Step Domestic Violence Project. Often, young people are expected to just know how to be in relationships in healthy and equal ways, but we learn through the examples of relationships given to us, and a big place we see these examples is in the media we watch. That's why this show uses media like movies and TV shows to start conversations about harmful and unhealthy behaviors in the relationships portrayed. But this is not to pass judgment on the media we're discussing. Every month, we invite young people in Maine to give their perspective and to voice their thoughts, opinions, and experiences around what they've seen in media and how it has impacted them or the people they know. There are sensitive materials in and spoilers of the media we discuss. We have a very special episode today in honor of Pride Month. Our guest is Cheyenne, they/them pronouns, a member of the Down East Rainbow Alliance. Our discussion today focuses on the importance of LGBTQ+ representation in the media and resources for Q+ youth. If you would like to reach out to us for support or more information, please call Next Steps 24/7 and free helpline at 1-800-315-5579. You can find more information about Down East Rainbow Alliance at downeastrainbowalliance.com. I'd like to now introduce Cheyenne.
All right. Well, thank you for having me. I'm Cheyenne Robinson Bauman. I use they, them pronouns, and I'm the lead facilitator with the Down East Rainbow Alliance. And we're a group that started in 2020, and our mission is advocacy, education, and support of LGBTQ+ and Two-Spirit+ community. And Next Step Domestic Violence Project is one of our partner organizations, so I'm really glad to be here. I also used to work for Next Step a few years ago, so I am also a former advocate and youth educator there, so I have a unique understanding of the dynamics of abuse and how that relates to LGBTQ+ relationships. So yeah, that's who I am and that's what we do. Our main component is the Traveling Rainbow Project, which is where we take our mobile pride display to a bunch of schools and just be a support for the students and the educators there. Our main goal is to improve the mental health outcomes of the youth in Washington County.
The Traveling Rainbow is such a unique and important thing, I think, because even though there are some incredible books out there for young people that have LGBTQ+ characters and themes, they're unfortunately not always accessible for a variety of reasons. But the fact that DRA is making them more accessible for the youth in Washington County is so huge, and having that support system there. It's a very unique organization that y'all have over there. I wish that y'all could be everywhere. That would be incredible. And I know I've asked you on a personal level several times, like, hey, where can I find other things that you guys do in my neck of the woods? And it's always, you know, there's just not enough resources. So I think it's amazing what y'all are doing.
Yeah, I'm really glad that I'm able to do this work. And I wish that it was around when I was a kid. So I'm glad that we're being able to provide that for the youth around here. And that's also one of the reasons why Down East Rainbow Alliance has a lending library that is free. And you can find a list of those locations on our website as well, because we want to make queer books accessible to kids who need them, because they're not always in your local library.
I think, you know, you nailed it. You wish you had it when you were a kid. I wish I had had it when I was a kid. I would have been thrilled to see somebody walking in with the lending library. It's just such an important thing that you guys are doing.
Yeah. And it's really important to be on this podcast, to be able to share this information with the people who are listening, especially if there are young people listening. I do have some information about unhealthy relationships for LGBTQ+ populations, if you want me to go into that.
Yeah, absolutely. I would love for you to do that.
Yeah. So I think we mostly understand that mental health outcomes for LGBTQ youth and adults are drastically worse for them than they are for our straight and heterosexual peers. 61% of bisexual women and 44% of lesbian women compared to 35% of straight women have experienced domestic violence. And that's coming from the CDC. And that's just the 2010 statistic. So it could be a lot higher now. And a third of bisexual men versus over a quarter of heterosexual men have experienced domestic violence in their lifetime. And more than half of all trans and non-binary people have experienced domestic violence at some point in their lifetime. So that's a lot of people. It's a lot of queer people that are experiencing some really unhealthy things in their relationships. And I think the other thing to think about too is that sometimes the tactics that LGBTQ plus abusers are using are unique. Something that a lot of people probably don't think about. They may threaten to out their partner who, you know, that their community may not know that they're LGBTQ plus. And they may carry out this threat, wreaking havoc with their partner's personal and professional life and their sense of well-being and safety in the community and at their workplace. They may wield harmful stereotypes against their partner, for example, saying that they don't look like the gender that they identify with and using that against them. They may call their partner homophobic, transphobic, and biphobic slurs, so using the existing heteronormative structures to further abuse their partner. And they also may coerce their partners into sexual activities which they're not comfortable with, justifying it by saying all real lesbians have sex this way, and I'm using air quotes for the listeners. There's no one way to be a lesbian. There's no one way to be transgender or non-binary. And unfortunately, abusers use those things against their partners. And they may tell their partner that there's no help for them and that no one will believe them because they're queer. And society has perpetuated these ideas, and abusers are really smart and they know how to use those things against their partner.
Yeah, that's all so important, I think, for everybody to understand, because the intersectionality of experiencing violence and abuse and these other aspects of our lives, they're so important and they're not talked about very often. And so I really appreciate you going into all of that, because I think that especially for young people, they don't understand how those things can be considered abuse when they're happening to us. It can be so confusing, right? And there's already so much else going on when we're young or when we're a part of a community that is kind of oppressed or looked down on in some ways, or they're just not thought of, they're not considered, right? So it can be really important to have conversations like this. And that's why I'm so glad that you came on the podcast today, because it's not talked about enough.
I see things on, you know, in the media about different types of abuse within heteronormative relationships, but there's not necessarily a whole lot being shown for queer relationships and what that might look like and how that might differ from what other people are seeing. And that makes it much harder because representation matters. And that's also, that kind of leads me into the next section of kind of what I want to talk about, which is why some of this stuff is happening. And like I said earlier, abusers tend to use existing homophobic, biphobic, and transphobic power structures to be able to abuse their partners. We know that abusers seek to induce disability, and they're going to seek vulnerable people and vulnerable populations in order to continue their power and control. And if representation in media matters, then bad representation has real-world consequences. And often the way that LGBTQ plus people are portrayed in movies and TV shows inform people on how to interact with those people and how to treat those people. And so we are seeing this a lot in stereotypes and different tropes in TV and movies. For example, the show Ugly Betty, that was popular in the 2000s. I recently started watching that because I never watched it when it was on TV, and I'm watching it. I watched it now because it's on Netflix, and I actually had to stop watching it because I was so upset with the way they were depicting a trans woman in that show. First of all, she was played by a cisgender woman, and then they used the really common secret trans woman trope where you suddenly have this person who's suddenly transitioned out of nowhere and they're, you know, a secret and they're trying to trick everybody and they're or taking advantage of the fact that they're now a woman and they're trying to trick whoever into a relationship or to do, you know, X, Y, and Z. And that is a really common trope from the 90s and the early 2000s, and honestly still persists a little bit. Another example of that is Friends. Friends has not aged well. That show, as much as I loved watching it, it did not age well. There is a lot of homophobic jokes in that show, and they also have the secret trans woman trope in there, with Chandler's father. They call him a father, even though he's clearly a trans woman, and they misgender them throughout the show and make a joke about the fact that they're a woman. And there's so many examples of that that, like, I'm not even gonna list them all, but there's a lot of examples of like the secret trans woman or the trans woman being the butt of the joke, being a man in a dress. And those examples in media are informing people on what is okay to say to people. And that's not how you should treat a trans woman. A trans woman is a woman, period, end of story. And so these depictions make people feel like it's okay to treat trans people in this way. So I have some more examples of other things as well. A lot of times in TV shows, we see bisexual and pansexual people as stereotypes, and that those stereotypes include them being promiscuous or greedy or coded as the villain. Like, a lot of the time, the only time we see a bisexual or pansexual person on TV is when they're played by the villain. And I'm going to use a Star Trek reference because I'm a huge nerd and I love Star Trek. And this is rampant in Star Trek, where the only time up until recently you saw a bisexual person was in the Mirror Universe episodes, where everybody in the Mirror Universe is evil. And so all the bisexual people are depicted as evil. And that's a problem. And that persists through a lot of different TV shows and movies with queer coding. And queer coding, as much as the name suggests, refers to the process by which characters in a piece of fictional media seem or are coded as queer. And this usually is determined by a set of characteristics that are traditionally associated with queerness. And so, for example, some queer-coded Disney villains, Ursula, she was actually based off of the drag queen Divine, and she's evil. And you'll actually find a lot of queer people who love Disney villains and heavily identify with the Disney villains because that's the only place where we saw ourselves represented. And some other examples are like Hook from Peter Pan. I always loved Hook. And Scar from The Lion King, or Hades from Hercules. They're all kind of depicted as like the limp-wristed stereotype, or like sassy or fashionable. And that's queer coding. And when we only see ourselves as the negative stereotype, that doesn't help us feel good about ourselves, and it doesn't make other people look on us kindly.
Yeah, I think it's very recent that we're seeing Q plus folks in a normal light in the media, that we're seeing Q plus relationships depicted in the media. But you're absolutely right. They've always been in our media, just in a very negative light. And that's so dangerous. And it's so untrue and it's unfair. And it affects the young people who are watching and seeing this, who are part of the Q plus community, who are maybe thinking, well, that's how I'm expected to act, or we feel like maybe I am the villain because that's how it's written in all the media that we see. And when we're young and the media impacts us so heavily, that's where we kind of get our ideas about who we are and who we want to be, by resonating with our favorite characters. I also personally, Hades, oh my gosh, yes, favorite.
I mean, I love a Disney villain.
Yeah, and it makes sense that we love the characters that we kind of see ourselves in. Unfortunately, a lot of those characters are the bad guys.
Yeah, and further than Disney and all of the other things, there are other ways in which queer people's relationships are depicted as unhealthy, but in a normal way. Like, this is how it's supposed to be. Like, I know I've seen in a lot of things where gay men are depicted as physically violent and leading to sex, which implies that gay men can't abuse each other because it's always going to turn into sex. And that's a common misconception, is that gay men can't abuse each other because they're men. And we know that that is not true. And men can have a much harder time coming forward to ask for help because of the way society views them and the way society views abuse. And that makes it really hard for them to get help. It makes me so sad to see that those are the normal depictions that gay men are getting, when that isn't how it is and that's not how it should be.
If you're just joining in, this is Relationship Rewind on WERU FM 89.9 Blue Hill. I'm your host, Carrie Clark, and today we are talking with Cheyenne about LGBTQ plus representation in the media and resources for Q plus youth. So we talk about how seeing Q plus characters in the media portrayed in a negative light can impact the Q plus people who are watching. But how do you think that that can also impact the cisgender heterosexual people who are watching?
Yeah, it gives them the wrong idea about what those relationships look like, and that can shape what those people think about as acceptable. Because if they're only seeing unacceptable forms of relationships, and they're going to think that all queer relationships are unacceptable because that's what they look like, if that's the only thing they're seeing. Not just with relationships, but with queer people in general. Like, we have shows that were really popular and won a lot of awards, like the show Transparent, where it was a cis man who was playing a trans woman, which you have to think about, like, is bad representation better than no representation? And you really have to think about what the impact of that bad representation is, because it's going to perpetuate the idea that trans women are just men in dresses. That's the problem with casting cis men as trans women in TV shows and movies. Honestly, there are plenty of trans women out there who want those roles. You can find them. So it really shapes what cisgender and heteronormative people think about these communities and what they think of as normal and acceptable. And they may not speak out if they see an unhealthy relationship that's queer, because they might think, well, that's what it's supposed to look like. That's what it looked like on TV. Another example of, like, the way trans people have been depicted in a very negative way is the movie The Silence of the Lambs, right? You have a trans woman, Buffalo Bill, as a perverse and dangerous person. And these depictions of people lead trans people to be more likely to be abused in public because they're seen as less than, they're seen as not human, they're seen as dangerous. And that's the rhetoric that we're hearing, that trans people are dangerous, trans women shouldn't be using women's bathrooms, and things like that. Those have real consequences, and they lead to laws that harm trans people. And they lead to people thinking it's okay to abuse people, and that is not okay. And so that's why we have to be mindful and conscious of the way we're depicting these people on TV. And abusers often target people they think they can get away with abusing or will be easier to abuse. And if you see somebody being abused in public, usually if it's a woman, somebody might step in and say, "That's stop doing that. That's not okay. I'm calling the police." But if that happened to a trans person, people might just walk by because they don't want to deal with it. It might make them uncomfortable because of the way they've seen trans people depicted on TV and movies. And so again, that has real world consequences.
Absolutely. And I think to that point too, if you saw that in the street, if you're stepping in, you're always like a little bit nervous that that behavior might get turned on to you. But that same danger exists, whether that is a trans woman or a heterosexual cisgender woman. The danger is still there. So why the hesitancy, if not for the reason that you are seeing a trans person in a different light?
It's all violence against women.
Exactly. We're in Maine. We're in small rural communities where people, they're not learning any different. It's hard to speak up. It can be really hard to speak up
Yeah, you have to think
because.
about how, like, a lot of people around here may never have met a queer person that they knew about, or I'm often the only queer person in a room. I'm sure that's the same for you. So you have to remember that a lot of people may not have ever encountered a queer person, and the only representation they're seeing is what they're seeing on TV, in movies, or in books. So we have to be careful with how we're depicting these things. It's the same way with race, right? If you're only depicting Black people as the bad guys, as gangbangers, as villains, and we live in a pretty white state. By the way, I'm Black. Our listeners can't see that, but if you're only encountering Black people on TV as the bad guys, then when you meet them in person, you might feel a little differently about that. You might have some stereotypes because of that. So these stereotypes have, again, real world consequences. And even the way that stories are written about queer people and queer relationships, you may have some decent representation in something. But we also have another trope that we have to worry about, which is the barrier gaze trope, which is where you might have a queer relationship or queer characters, but at the end of the story, one of them dies or it ends in tragedy. And that was really common for a very long time. I mean, there are stories from like the 1800s that are like that, where like it's okay to have this queer character, but they have to be dead by the end in order for me to publish this. And the same is true for shows. There's so many shows that I watched that I've was so excited about the relationship, and then at the end somebody dies. And that doesn't have to be the case, because there's a lot of queer joy out there that we could be exploring. And I have some other examples too of some different things, like the book and the movie Call Me By Your Name was really popular for a while. It depicts an adult and minor relationship. And this is pretty common. TV shows like the show that was popular in the 2000s called Queer as Folk, where it depicts an adult minor relationship. And it's depicting this as normal, that adult gay men are targeting young boys. And this is a dangerous thing to push, because we end up with people talking about this in politics at calling queer people and gay men groomers. That is really dangerous. And that rhetoric has been coming up a lot, and it's now being used against trans people. And we know that there's a really bad power dynamic between adults trying to have relationships with minors. And there's a reason for that. You know, there it should not be depicted as normal.
It's rampant in our media. There's an adult having a relationship with a minor. There is that power dynamic always, every time. And it's inappropriate and it's unacceptable. But I mean, it's especially harmful when the characters are part of the Q+ community, because it's just kind of like piling on top of all of the other negativity that we see when we're seeing Q+ characters.
Yeah, so these relationships need to not be depicted as normal. And it also gives teens the wrong idea about what they can expect. If they're seeing kids their age dating adults, they're going to think that that's acceptable for them to do, and not understand that there is a power dynamic there that isn't okay, that they're going to be exploited. We also have the show Sex Education, which has shown a lot healthier relationships and dynamics and some queer people on there. But there's also a problematic piece between Adam and Eric, who are dating, because Adam is closeted and has a lot of internalized homophobia. And because of that, he mistreats and bullies Eric quite a lot. I mean, it's sad that Adam is dealing with these internalized homophobic feelings, but he doesn't have a right to take that out on his partner. That show also finally depicted an asexual character, which you don't see very often, but Sex Education didn't depict them in the best light. And I think that if you don't know anything about asexual people, or asexual, or how you view those people as being cold and emotionless or like a robot. And a lot of times the only way asexual people are seeing themselves depicted is through robots. So that says something about what we think about asexual people, is that they're unfeeling and cold. And that is just not true.
Working with our guest speakers always makes me wish I could go back in time and give my younger self a pep talk. If you could give your younger self some advice, what do you think that would be?
I think I would just say that to myself, that you're not always the villain. You're not monstrous, because I think that's something a lot of queer people relate to, is the monstrous part of things. That's why a lot of queer people are drawn to horror, because of the way, you know, those creatures, those monsters are depicted, and it feels very close to how we're treated in real life. So I think it would be worth it to tell myself that, you know, there's nothing wrong with you. You're not a bad guy just because of the way you are. The way you are is normal and good and fine. I know that this is true, especially for, like, I'm on the aromantic spectrum, so I feel very little romantic attraction, and I didn't realize that until, like, way into college. And I had a lot of people telling me that, like, I was cold and that I was emotionless because I wasn't interested in romantic relationships for a very long time. It wasn't until I met my current partner, my husband, that I felt any romantic attraction that I could actually recognize. So I think just knowing that, like, no, you are not weird, you are not broken for, you know, these things. It's not a lack of feeling. It's just, it's different for me than it would be for somebody that isn't aromantic. And I think that's true for, especially for asexual people, because I think so often we're told that to be human is to be sexual. And that's just not the case. There are plenty of people who aren't interested in sex, and that doesn't make you broken or weird. And you can have a fulfilling life without sex or a relationship if that's what you want, if that's what makes you happy. And it doesn't have to be an absolute. There, everything is a spectrum, and you can be anywhere on that spectrum. And so I guess that's what I want people to take away from this, is that you don't have to be just one thing, and you don't have to be an absolute on either end of the spectrum.
I love that so much. I think that that is a really important thing that young people should understand.
Little announcement before we jump off, is that we have Downeast Pride coming up in June, June 28th in Eastport and June 30th in Lubeck. And we're having some craft vendors. There's going to be some art activities in Eastport. And there's also going to be a movie night on Friday, the 28th. And that's going to be The Birdcage. And that will be at Sutherland Amphitheater at 8:30. If you want more information about Pride and a more detailed schedule, go to downeastrainbowalliance.com.
A big thank you to Cheyenne for being our guest speaker this month and having this conversation about LGBTQ plus relationships and representation in the media. You've been listening to Relationship Rewind. I'm your host, Carrie Clark, and I hope you'll join us again next month on the third Tuesday from 4:30 to 5, where we will be continuing this conversation and breaking down another relationship in popular media. You can also listen to our live stream or subscribe to our podcast at weru.org or on the WERU smartphone app. We are also now on Spotify and Apple Music. If you are a young person in Maine who is interested in being a guest speaker, have ideas of media we could talk about, or you know of a young person who might be interested, please reach out to me at cclark@nextstepdvproject.org. If you need support or would like to learn more about dating violence or domestic violence, please reach out to us at Next Step by calling our 24/7 helpline at 1-800-315-5579. You can find more information about Downeast Rainbow Alliance as well as Q+ resources at downeastrainbowalliance.com.